Come on and get it, honey, while the getting's good, good, good.
Hello and welcome to Unapologetically Judith Owen. This is the podcast from Judith Owen. Hi, Judith Owen.
Hello, BB.
And me, BB Lynch. Now, Judith, I'm not suggesting I'm obsessed with you or even a little in love. I mean, let's let the lawyers decide. But I have been watching, reading, listening to all your interviews about your latest incredible album, Come On and Get It. And what comes across loud and clear is the album is, yes, of course, a beautiful homage to and a celebration of the unsung, brilliantly talented women of 40s and 50s jazz and blues. But it's also a celebration of how badass they were, their attitude, how unapologetic they were, and how powerful being unapologetic is. And that's what this series is talking about. I'm BB Lynch. And hello, is Judith Owen there, please?
I am here. I am here. I'm just awed by how much you look like Elvis Presley in Heartbreak.
Well, you just humiliated yourself there because you meant the film Jailhouse Rock. How dare you?
No, it's just that you, I mean, I think way back in happier times, about an hour ago, you said way on down, look how much I look like Elvis Presley. And I was like, I was stunned silence on my end.
Yeah, but you can only see me sitting down. You can't see what my hips are doing. Hey, Judith.
Yes.
I've got news and I need you to be brave.
No.
I'm going to say it just so it's out there, right? This is the last episode of the series. I know. You've got a choice, okay? You can either, for the final episode, which is a huge deal, the final episode, you can either flirt awkwardly with me, as you've been trying to do the whole series, or we can talk about what you've learned from our Come On and Get It women and how you're taking that knowledge forward. What do you want to do? Talk?
I think talk whilst flirting uncomfortably.
Good luck.
Well, that's been the theme of the whole thing. Let's be honest.
What have you? I'm a bad flirt. Are you a good flirt?
I'm terrible.
Yeah, I can't do it.
So bad. And also, I don't even know when somebody's flirting with me. It's
right.
Just horrendous. I'm sort of like, oh, they seem nice.
Yeah.
I mean, it just like, I mean, you'd literally, well, I did have a woman once come up to me after a gig and she put a tongue in my ear.
I think if they lick you, it's a sign. Yeah.
Her husband, she burst into tears when I pushed her off and he said, I'm so sorry. She's been so looking forward to meeting you. I mean, believe me, if you think I have great, great moments, like I've got so many, I have so many appalling moments like that.
An actual tongue in your actual ear.
In my actual ear.
I don't think I'd ever recover from that.
Yeah, and she's sobbing. And I went, oh, it's okay. Because again, I'm a pleaser. And he said, look, just to let you know, if you come back, it was Portland. If you come back, you know, you should come and, as I would, of course, strangers, you should come and stay with us, you know, because we've got a really nice guest house and we've got fresh sheets and everything.
They've been licked clean this morning.
They've been licked clean. And she's sobbing next to me. The whole thing was just like, is there no one to save me from these unbelievable people? Stuck her tongue in my ear.
But I had an appointment, a meeting with a really important literary agent once, and we went for the cheek kiss and I went the wrong way and I ended up kissing her on the nose. Do you think that's what this woman did? Was it an accidental?
When you walk up to the side of somebody's head and stick your viper-like tongue into their ear in like a really precision poke into the ear, okay? Like a blue, like, you know, it's like a gecko or something coming up to you. So I was just, no, there was no mixing up. No.
I'm actually in pain. Can I ask you a serious question?
Yes, please.
How pretty am I out of 10? No, tell me what you've learned. Tell me what you've learned. And this is actually a stupid question because it's really hard to do, but what is there a top line that you've learned from these women that you adore, that we adore?
Yeah, I've learned to... I've learned that I need to work every single day to be fearless. You know, now I know I come across as being pretty fearless most of the time, and anybody meeting me would think, oh, she's so confident. But you know, so many people,
she's so confident. Let me clean her ear.
Let me just stick my viper like tongue in her ear, my gecko like tongue in her ear. But it's just, honestly, I think anybody that leads with that, you know, confidence, but underneath is sort of thinking, I'm crap, what am I doing? We all know that one. It's just the armor you wear. It's the game face. But I'm getting better and better all the time. It's all a work in process, but I do find myself not putting up with stuff that I used to put up with. Now that's an age thing too. But a lot of it is about having sung these songs, having been out there in this way, having been so, you know, big on stage, having allowed myself, or rather giving myself permission to be absolutely who I am and not to really care that much whether you like me or not. Because isn't that just too hard going through life, as so many of us do, being more concerned about whether you like me, you know, as opposed to just being who you are, being authentically yourself, and you know, and people will like you or they won't like you, and that's fine, because that's how it's meant to be. You're not meant to be loved by everybody, but many of us are just hung up on the fact that we're meant to be loved by everyone. I mean, that's the sad truth. So I think that's the biggest thing. I've learned from these women is to, and this is musically as well, this is performance-wise, musically, who I am. It has spilt over into my life, into who I am very clearly. I didn't expect that, Bibi. I didn't expect it to affect me.
Oh, how? How has it?
I'm able much more to like, keep. I was talking on the last episode about asking for your needs to be met. I am much more able to say, I need this. I really want that. This is not making me happy. This is a problem for me. I don't like this. I feel uncomfortable doing this. The idea that, you know, one of the most powerful words that any of us have is the word no. Yes is easier. We say yes to everything. But somebody said to me just, you know, a couple of days ago, they were coming to do a photo shoot with me and in my home. And they said, is it okay if we invite somebody else over to at the same time and then we can do that by the piano? And I went, no.
Did you? And how did you feel about saying it?
It felt a bit painful. And so I said, listen, you know, I just want to be clear. That's my home. Me in it, that's one thing. And I need to make sure that you don't see anything in it that speaks of, you know, my private life. But to have somebody else come in who I don't know, who's a stranger to me, no. And that was like, and that was it. And the reaction was, I completely understand. I just thought I would ask. And that is my point. So when we ask for the things that we need, the worst that can happen is somebody saying no, no. And how bad is that? Not bad at all. But I always used to go in thinking that it would automatically be no, and I hate you for being so needy. Truth is, people actually respect you for setting boundaries and the lines and for being very clear. I think to be transparent in your honesty, you know, as far as not to be cruel, not to be rude for the sake of it. That's not all I want to be, but I do want to be very clear about what is right for me, as opposed to saying yes and then hating myself and ruminating about it for days afterwards and feeling taken for granted. And the only reason that's happened is because I've allowed myself to be taken for granted by putting somebody else's needs before mine. This is a very tricky thing to learn to do. I'm not used to it just yet, but I'm getting a lot better at it.
Well, you know, I'm obsessed with TikTok Tarot, especially. Apparently he's really in love with me. He's just scared to come forward. Let's see what the cards say. There's a woman, and I should know her name. She's on TikTok, and I just kind of scrolled and found her, and she has this kind of practice, and it's so powerful, and I've used it a little bit, when I remember Stuart, and when I do it, it works, and when I can't, it's these things aren't easy to do all the time. And just all she says is, let them. So it's like, oh yeah, but if I say this, they'll hate me. Let them. If I say this, oh no, they misunderstood me, they didn't hear what I'm saying. Let them. Oh my God, it just releases that pent up need to explain yourself or to justify anything, or quantify anything. You just don't have to do any of that. Let them think what they want to think. It's so hard to do, but how brilliant is that?
Oh, it's so hard to do. That is a new one for me. And that is incredible.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that because, you know, we, again, the pleaser, the child that is the pleaser, that then becomes the pleasing adult. is that you spend most of your life worrying about what other people are thinking and whether they like you or not, and how you are judged on every decision you make and every thought you have and every word you speak, and let them, is it? That is the answer, which is, it's out of your hands. But because we are such, I'm a control freak, you know, I'm an A personality and I think I'm omnipotent. I need to control everything so everybody will be happy.
But you can't. And that's the crux of let them. You cannot change someone's mind. If they hear what they want to hear, you can't change their action. You can't change their belief. You can't change their thought. So take that pressure off you and free yourself up. What I love about what you're doing is...
I love that.
Isn't it amazing? Write it down. You're not writing it down.
I've already got it in my brain. It's not that hard a phrase.
When we're talking about how you're taking this kind of attitude out into your life and how it's impacting and how maybe that's unexpected, it's still not easy though, right? There's still hiccups. You and I were having a conversation the other day and that was horrible.
Okay, so I'm a work in progress, okay? And everyone is. So I don't want anybody listening to this to think that I've figured it all out. And, you know, I mean, well, what does it matter if you do? But I think let them. And, but I struggle, and it all depends on, you know, how confident I'm feeling that day or in the mood I wake up in. You know, I'm chemically challenged. So it's all dependent on that too. And I found myself recently in a situation where I had this kind of older industry guy, music industry guy, mansplain some shit to me. And
how well did that go down?
Oh my God. Now, we joke, my band and I joke all the time about mansplaining, you know, and they do it on purpose. It's like, dude, you want me to like park the car for you? You know, they do these things on purpose just to make me really like, and it just makes me burst into laughter now. It just really, really does. Do you need me to open the door for you? It's all that stuff. And I just love it. Can I show you how this whole piano playing thing works? And it's, so it just makes me scream. But then I find myself in a situation that I haven't been in for a very, very long time because I run my own ship. You know, that's the reason I did it. That's the reason when I was at Capitol Records, or as Nelly Lutcher called it, Crapital Records. The reason when I came out of that, and it was the best of times, worst of times, as I said back a few episodes back. But I promised myself then that I would never, ever, ever jump through hoops to make, you know, to make somebody happy who couldn't be made happy. Again, let them. But also, you know, when it's your career on the balance and it's your life, it's a little bit harder. But the harder you try, the less they're going to go along with it. They just see you as being desperate and that's it. And that I would not anymore put up with man bloody splaining. Come on. And so I find myself in a
situation.
So I find myself in a situation where I'm now, you know, I'm now being mansplained by this guy about, you know, the secret to success and what it's all about and blah, blah, blah. It was just a throwback to those times. And I was very angry afterwards because if I'd been one of those women, I reckon, I don't know, but I have a feeling that what I should have done is just to have got up and left, to have walked out of that office, to have gone, you know, just said, you know what? I have to, whatever. It didn't have to be confrontational. Although if it had been a man, I'm sorry to be so clear about this, but I think it would have gone differently. I don't think that would ever even have happened. But I was more angry with myself afterwards for not having stopped the conversation and said, you know what, I have to leave because, or this isn't why I came here, or this isn't what I need or want, but thank you for your time so much, but I have to get back to work. Anything that was clear about, nah, this to me was such a abhorrent waste of my time and life. And you know what I'm saying? It hurt.
Yeah.
And what hurt me most wasn't him. He's a lovely guy. What hurt me most was that I was not speaking. I was saying all that I could as far as, you know, not agreeing with certain things, etc. But I wasn't saying the most important thing, which was, this is not okay and I'm going. That made me more upset because I had failed myself. I had been a bad parent to myself, and that is what I'm still learning to do is when something like the, going back to the, you know, Kathy Sharp Ross, if somebody makes you feel bad, if you're in a situation that feels like you are being undermined or marginalized, leave. Do it nicely. Just be very clear, very nice. Just be yourself, but go. It is not serving you. It is basically making you feel worse. And the reason it'll make you feel worse to stay is because you are letting yourself down. And I think that is still something that I am learning through trial and error. And that's a tough one. It's very tough.
It's a tough one, but let's be kind to you. A couple of days later,
I was like Vesuvius. I was on a tear. I was so angry. I was so angry because seriously, you know, if you're somebody that ruminates or has had a history of rumination, which is my, you know, with my depression and everything, it's anxiety based depression. And so much of that is rumination. And what I've had to learn and the skills I've had to learn is to stop that, is to literally use the word, like you said, let them. My word for stopping that is extinguish. And it's just pulling Ooh. Down. And that's my therapist, my incredible cognitive behavioral therapist said, you know, where they're now realizing that some people, it's not enough to say, okay, I see you. I see the negativity. I see the rumination. You stay over there. I'm not buying into that. That doesn't work for a lot of us. The new understanding and the research has shown that actually is to stop it dead. And finding a word like extinguish is like, dang.
I love that. I am writing that down. This is me writing.
And
extinguish.
And it works. It's like, nope. And it's the thing that I needed, you know, that's literally what I needed to do with that situation, that conversation. And that's really it. And the thing that hurts someone like me more is, like I said, the rumination afterwards. And you're right. I should have enough. Again, it's like the compassion to know that I was in that situation I haven't been in for so long with the kind of person I haven't had this kind of a conversation for so long. But you did
change. So then you have a chat with a doctor and you do what you wish you'd done with the mansplainer.
Now I have to laugh about this one. This is a funny one. But at the time I was like, what? So when I'm in Switzerland, I'm doing my high kicks. I'm so over flexible. I'm singing like a real bump and grind number. And I did a high kick over my head and I do that on stage and it's a hoot, but I practice in my room before I go in to warm up. And because I am actually a cack-handed bastard, as I refer to myself to my husband, I'm so clumsy off stage. I can knock everything over, honestly. And I have done on stage many times. I have to have an acrylic glass because I knock over so many glasses. It's shocking. So now I have one made of a...
Don't give her the glass.
No, really. I have an acrylic glass for that reason. So I'm doing my exercises. I'm high kicking in my room and I'm walking, high kicking like I would on stage. And I high kick too close to the coffee table and come down and smash into the coffee table with my head. And I tore the meniscus in the side of my knee. So it's really bothering me when I get back, by the time I get back to America. And it's really bothering me because I re-injure myself here in New Orleans. And I go to this doctor and here it comes. And I have an x-ray. I go to see an orthopedic sports doctor here in LA, in New Orleans. And he comes into the room and he's a sort of like ordinary looking bloke. He looks old enough to be my father. That's how wrong I got it. And he said, so tell me. And I'm saying that because you see where I'm going now. And he says, tell me, how did you do this? And I said, well, I was doing high kicks on stage. You know, I was performing and I dance a lot when I'm performing. He went, why are you dancing on stage at your age? I mean, that's something for like people in their 20s. And I almost passed a turnip. All right. Now I was like, I was in shock. And I said, what? And he went, well, I mean, that's something that, you know, young people dance. Yeah. I mean, what are you doing? And I went, I'll be dancing and performing till the day I'm dying, till you're literally nailing down the lid of the coffin. I was so angry.
Oh,
and he went,
my
God. Well, I'm only teasing, of course. I'm only teasing. And I'm just staring at him now like I look like Medusa, honest to goodness. I was just incensed. And he said, actually, to be completely honest, I've looked at your skeleton, the x-rays, and you have the most perfect skeleton. I mean, your bones are incredible. I mean, I just, obviously you're very, now he's gabbling because he can see the loathing that is like permeating out of every pore in my body. And he said, your skeleton is incredible. I mean, you're obviously a very fit person. I mean, go you. I mean, it was ridiculous. So now he's turned into, go you, he's pompo, he's turned into my cheerleader. I know. And I'm looking, it's just like, would you say that to a man? No, you wouldn't. And it was just kind of like, all right, so let me get this right. I didn't say it, but all I could think of was, so, okay. So once you're out of your 20s, well, you're past your 40s, goodbye, long since. And it's now, you shouldn't do any of this, as opposed to what he should have said, which is, this is fabulous. That's great. That's great. You're so fit. This is wonderful. Good for you. No, no. And yes, it was teasing. But as we all know, in every tease, there is a kernel of truth. And so I called him on it and I felt really good about that because it was one of those moments where you're just like, fuck you. You know, no, you don't.
You channeled your Lady J. You know, Lady J, when you've been on the road, loads of people, I know when we've spoken, you've said that you get really great responses from other women and how kind of lovely that is. Do they respond to your performance, the songs, the combination of both? Do you know what I mean? Is it your attitude? Is it the lady attitude? They're going, yeah, I love that. Or is it the saucy lyrics? Or what do you think?
I think there's two things that happen after performing live, and that is women or young, medium, old, of all ages, who really relate to and respond to who I'm being and how I'm being on stage, how in control and powerful but it's the whole thing. It's the singing, it's the music, it's the performance, it's the intimacy of like relating to the audience as well. It's that sense of being utterly in control and comfortable and joyful, utterly joyful on stage. And you really, I don't think you see, I mean, you see plenty of, we were talking about Taylor Swift last week, but it's sort of like, you know, seeing somebody enjoying themselves and being so utterly at home on stage. And let's relate to the doctor in this one. You know, we've got that's a young woman doing this and people are still kind of going, oh my God, I can't believe what she does. I can't believe, you know, it's just incredible. Well, right. Of course she does, because she's capable of all those things. Well, guess what? I'm at the other end and I'm like, that's what I'm doing. And the point of what I'm doing and the reason I am this person is because A, it's the thing I love to do. It makes me feel alive and happy and the best I could ever be. But also I think women need to see that. It can't just be, if you're looking for somebody that, you know, affects you, influences you, inspires you, yes, it's going to be young artists, but it should also be, I remember seeing Tina Turner when she, you know, when she's like deep into her, you know, on stage in her 50s, and she was basically kicking everybody's asses around her every age. And it's like, no, no, no. And I remember thinking, that's it right there.
It's seeing yourself as well, isn't it? It's seeing who you are. It's great seeing someone much younger, but if you're our kind of age, to see someone our kind of age would be like, oh yes, okay.
That's right. And I think that it's good for women to see that, you know, nobody would ever tell, I mean, how can you ever say to somebody that you shouldn't do something, or that, you know, you shouldn't do that because you're a certain age, or you shouldn't be wearing, you know, it's like that you shouldn't wear white after whatever the fuck the day is, you know, but you know what I'm saying? It's like, there's so many shoulds and shouldn'ts in this world. Get over it. I mean, aren't we in a time now where you should ultimately, or rather, if you choose to do everything you're capable of doing and you can do it well, and that's who you are and that's what you do it till you can't do it. So I think that's a lot more about people's, you know, their preconceptions of what you are or aren't allowed to do. That's very sad that anybody, I mean, you would not, you know, you're not going to tell a painter or any other, you know, an artist, you've got to stop writing now because that's just, I mean, it's bad enough that that is happening, you know.
But I'm afraid.
No, absolutely not. That's not how it is. So it was, it's extraordinary for me because I feel like I am championing grown-up women, you know. I feel like I am sending out the message that you could do anything, you know, if you want to do it, do it. Do it. Life is short. Do everything you're capable of and you're good at and enjoy it and savor every second of it. And for young women that seem to be really a growing part demographic or a growing part of my audience, it's really healthy for them to see that too.
How lovely for you that you're getting that affirmation as well from younger people.
I find it really very moving because that, of course, was me listening to these women and just feeling like, oh gosh, you know, that's what I crave to have, to be, and that amazing, seemingly that absolute control in their musical world over what they do of themselves, their band, their performing. It was absolutely everything. And I do think it's important to see people down the road, to see people who are doing this. I mean, it's kind of laughable. It's like there's a big, you know, big deal about the Rolling Stones coming in and playing at Jazz Fest. And there's Mick, you know, who's still running marathons and running around the stage at 81. And it's sort of... I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful. And we should be applauding that. We should be applauding that as opposed to saying, you know, nobody is.
Also really short-sighted for a physician to be saying that because, you know, physically do what you love, mentally definitely do what you love. You know, it's such a silly thing to say.
I thought it was very funny that, yeah, well, that's somebody that's, you know, again, yes, he if it was a tease, he could not have chosen the worst person to do it to because yes. It was sort of like, little did he know that.
Write a song about him, Owen. Write a song about him. I don't mean that.
I think I might. No, I always have done. Everybody that always like tweaks me out, I tend to write a song about. But ultimately, it's intriguing to me that would be so. I know the majority of people aren't doing this past a certain age. I know that. But shouldn't we be? Shouldn't we be applauding and saying, yeah, for those who are? And also to give, you know, to inspire others to know that actually you're not meant to just go down and stop doing stuff when you pass 50. That's not it.
I'm going to do a segue that's going to make you want to kiss my face. It's going to make you want to stick your tongue in my ear. You're not going to not stop over 50, right? Judith Owen comes alive. Oof. Hang on. Have you got a new album out? Have you got a new album coming out in May?
I certainly do.
Is it called Judith Owen Comes Alive?
I don't know how you know about this. It could be the fact that we actually sent you all the information. It is Judith Owen Comes Alive. Now, remember I smashed my leg into the coffee table so beautifully.
Yeah.
Tore the meniscus. That's a band name, isn't it? Judith Owen and the Torn Meniscus.
certainly my dating life.
It is. Thank you. The Torn Meniscus. So I recorded it all. It was 11 shows. We recorded it. I've just finished mixing it. And it will be coming out mid-May. And it's thrilling. It's thrilling because it's that, you know, the difference between a studio album and the difference between Come On and Get It and Judith Owen Comes Alive, because it's like some of the songs from Come On and Get It, but mostly new songs. And what it is, it's kind of, it's the evolution between hearing me just like do this for the first time when I recorded Come On and Get It, and you're hearing those songs and that joy in singing that music. And then in the live version of it, you're hearing absolutely unapologetic, high, as heightened and as take the roof off and as take you to church in that, you know, small C way. An experience, and it speaks volumes about how this music and how doing this has changed me so much as a performer as well. I mean, it's really, it's so out. It is so all out there, and it's so unapologetically powerful. And that's from the entire band, the Gentlemen Callers too. It was a thrill to do, and you feel the energy, that the level of energy is extraordinary. So I'm really thrilled by it, because, you know, I'm one of those people who goes to see shows and I'm beside myself with joy, and then I buy the album afterwards, and I think we all do this, and then think, well, I'm not feeling the same excitement as the live. And that's because you can't.
Yeah.
Because nothing's as exciting as the live experience. It never will be. So I've captured that. And I'm really, really very, very happy. But I can hear the change in me. I'm at the piano for a few of the songs as well. It's the thing that I do that I'm happiest at. That's where I'm the most put together, as I keep saying, but that's where I really find my unapologetic self. That's on stage. And I finally stopped worrying. So I am the person on stage that thinks, or rather my MO is let them. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. If I can turn it all the way around, let them.
So that says to me, that's it. You're done. That's it now. It's over now, Judith Owen. You don't need to do anything else because you're done. You're done. What's next? Nothing.
Are you friends with a doctor? Is he? Are you in? You are, aren't you? You're dating
him. I am.
What's next is touring, and I'll be touring in America, and then I'll be coming back to Europe in June, July, August, and then I believe I'm doing a tour. I think I'm going to be going out to Australia at some point. And so I'll be touring with this for the rest of the year, no doubt. And then probably doing another studio album. And the thing that I keep talking about, which is of course the big classical orchestral piece, that is now back in the works. But I'm also working on like two stage productions. There's very female centric, one is, you know, of course in jazz, the other is in classical, but to me, they're absolutely connected. I've never seen a disconnect between those two worlds, because there's so much how I grew up and what I grew up with.
How much am I allowed to ask about these projects? How much do you want to say?
Well, the one is based on, is wrapped around these women, of course, these incredible women and their delicious stories, because people have really, I was so gratified by the reaction to me telling their stories when I did the Grammy Museum performance last year. It was, I was telling the stories of these women, and they really do read like movies. I mean, they are so extraordinary, and their lives are so extraordinary. And so I'm like moving around the idea of doing that in a theatrical way. And the one about the artist's one, shall we say, but the classical pieces, again, it's about women. Of course it's about women. That's where I am right now. I'm celebrating what I've discovered and the stories of the women that have gone before that relate to me, to you, to all women that have, you know, that it's looking back and seeing what's gone before and what women did and how we've come to this point that allows us to never want, you know, the genie to go back in the bottle, as much as people would like us to get back in that bottle, cannot ever happen. It can't happen.
That's what I love. That's what I meant when I was teasing you about, oh, it's just over now. You're stopping, because of course you're not, because you're taking, you've got a new starting point. The starting point now is that you're not walking the walk and talking the talk. You are that now. You are what you wanted to be. That's your new starting point. And from that, you further explore these avenues. Is that fair to say?
No, I think it's very, very smart way of describing, because I'm at the place where, yes, I always wanted to be. And there's still so much work to do, both on myself and on being that person that I feel like I can only now get better and flourish, but also musically. I mean, I don't believe you stop learning. I don't believe you ever stop expanding unless you want to, unless you're bored, unless you're fed up, unless you're tired. Personally, I don't think you stop. You know, I'm an adventurous at heart. I want to savor everything. And my biggest, you know, my fear has always been, oh my God, I'm not going to get it. I want to get it all done in time. I'm not going to squeeze it all in. And I feel like I've lost a lot of time in my self-sabotage, which has come from my illness, from my, you know, my depression, from my rumination, from the upbringing I had, from what I had to do to get well in the first place. So you're absolutely right. I feel like I'm at the starting blocks again.
It's exciting. It's always wanting to learn and looking forward, but still loving the present. It's just brilliant. So as we chat, Judith Owen, you know what I'm thinking? You told me a beautiful quote that actually kind of sums this all up, sums up everything we've said.
Yes, yes, it does. And astonishingly, it comes from my mother-in-law, Fabulous Dora, who at age 80, and I wrote a song about this called Sympathy, and you'll see why. And the line in it was, you know, it's basically, I need to feel sympathy for myself, meaning compassion. Because at age 80, she admitted to me once over breakfast that we were having together that she said, I wonder, you know, when will I ever learn to like myself and feel that I am lovable and loved? And it almost, I was breathless. I was breathless because there's an 80-year-old woman saying exactly what I started out thinking, what I still think, what we all think, the thing that we all go through life thinking. And then I thought, I do not want to be 80 and having those same thoughts, which is, why don't I feel like I'm enough? And I think that, you know, that really is what this is all coming back to. And what we've been talking about over all these episodes really is about women that who definitely in one aspect of their lives and many aspects were certainly enough, were filled up, were incredible, were unapologetically, authentically themselves and didn't care. But there's my 80-year-old mother-in-law who cared so much what other people thought of her and didn't feel worthy or loved or lovable. And that really hit hard. And so to me, that is something that I think is utterly relevant to all of this. And it's what it's all about, which is feeling like you are enough, even if you were never told, even if you grew up thinking you certainly won't, even if life has made you feel that way. Or it's not life that makes you feel that way. Of course, it's what's inside. But getting to that place where you are, you know that you're enough and that you're damn fine to boot. And that, like you said, what was the line you told me about what you say when people, what was it?
Let them.
And that's what Dora never learned. And that's what I'm struggling, what we're all struggling to get our heads around. Let them. And so, yeah.
Absolutely beautiful. Quickly tell me, what did you say when she said that to you?
I actually was one of the few times in my life that I've been utterly gobsmacked. And I said to her, Dora, with the life that you've led, the extraordinary life that you've led, I understand why you don't feel like you're enough. I mean, she literally escaped Poland and lost her whole family to the Holocaust and was sent out alone, 18-year-old on a ship with no English to turn up at Ellis Island and to then not be able to get her family out and knowing that they were all gone and to live this life and to get through and to have a family and to have terrible things happen throughout her life and great losses. I just said to her, look who you are. Look what you have achieved. Look the life that you've had. I know what you suffer from is survivor's guilt in the sense that you will never be enough and that you don't deserve any of this, that you don't deserve any joy. But in truth, you know, that you so deserve it. And what it did to me, I couldn't say more than that, of course, because she said that's so kind and thank you. But as we all know, it's how you feel inside. It's what you believe inside. And all I knew was, like I said, I must change my record in my head. I must create new grooves because I will end up the same way as Dora. You know, this is how my mother felt. This is how her mother felt. This is how I felt. And it continues and it keeps going until you decide, oh boy, I don't want to be an 80-year-old woman saying, will I ever feel okay about myself? Really? And that is a message to everyone listening too.
Oh my God, I loved that. I've got to bloody go now. You've made me cry. How fucking dare you? It's amazing. It's time for the final outro. Okay, you can have a little bit of a flirt with me. You can say three things about me.
You're funny.
One.
You look like Elvis. And most importantly, this has been the most joyful thing to do with you, Phoebe Lynch. a woman who I have absolutely, completely loved since the minute I met you and has made me laugh, and who I just, whose company I love, but whose intelligence and wit I love so much. So this has been a joy doing this with you. I know it was it was like, oh, what should we do? Hey, will this work? But it has been absolutely joyful, and you have been the greatest host, as far as I'm concerned, an interviewer. So I thank you so much for that. I said I wouldn't cry.
Stop it.
Look at me.
Stop it. You're so sweet. Thank you so much. It's been lovely. And producer Jules as well. It's been dream team,
yeah,
right?
You've been incredible.
It's been incredible. Yeah. I've loved it. So stop it. So look, I need to say goodbye. I've loved being part of this. Huge thank you to everyone listening and to you, Judith. Thank you for making this incredible. Don't forget to follow us and give the series a review and watch this space, because unapologetic women always return. Unapologetically, Judith Owen was produced by Pineapple Audio Production, and we will see you very, very, very soon.